The Athletic FC Podcast Network.
Hello, I'm Taylor Payne. Welcome to Pod on the Tyne, your six-point turn of a podcast covering Newcastle United from The Athletic FC. I've got two lovely chaps with me today. Jacob Whitehead's here. Hello, Jacob. How are you doing?
Hello, my dear. How's it going?
It's all right, mate. The sun's out. You feeling good?
Yeah, my day started with a continental breakfast with George. So, you know, how much better can it really get from there?
How could it get better? A continental breakfast with anybody else apart from George? Surely.
Yes. How are you, George? Are you okay? Did you enjoy your continental breakfast? What was on it? What was your favourite part of the continental breakfast?
In the Ibis Hotel in Leicester, yeah. I mean, one of the great glamour spots of Europe, as you know. Yeah, there was a little bit of croissant in there, a little bit of marmalade, a little bit of scrambled eggs. Yeah, it was good. Yeah, I'm good. I've had a bit of a throwback, so my boss has obviously decided that me and Joy just aren't made for each other. You know, it's just like that's not allowed. Yeah. So I've literally just got back from 5 days away watching Ipswich Town nearly get relegated, Southampton nearly get relegated. No, definitely get relegated.
Definitely get relegated, yeah.
And Leicester stink the place out. So I have kind of got back to Newcastle and sort of thought that was quite interesting. They made me do that for like a big piece about the three teams being at the bottom of the table, almost certainly going down, just as happened last season, the teams that came up. At Ipswich, there was a bit of hope, and, you know, it was good atmosphere, a bit of hope, bit of novelty, but that hope was crushed. Southampton, pure resignation, but a moment of sort of emotional connection at the end. Leicester last night, absolutely hapless and toxic. And it was like, yeah, I've experienced all of those things so many times. I know we can't always just keep harking back, but I've experienced so many of those things as a Newcastle fan and someone covering Newcastle. And for Newcastle now to be the team that just like swoops in and swats the hapless team aside is quite a turnaround. Yeah. I mean, I know we've like just won the League Cup, for God's sake, but like, you know, for Newcastle to be the team that does the swatting and for everybody else to be feeling angst is pretty
You must
incredible.
Have been a bit like old Biff Tannen in Back to the Future 2, standing going, this is all very familiar.
Oh, so totally familiar. Yeah, and like, yeah. So I've had a bit of an epic road trip. It's nice to be back. But yeah. Yeah, a moment of realisation about how life changes. How are you doing, Taylor?
Yes, I'm not bad. I'm not bad at all. The sun certainly put a spring in my step after last week when I was very, very, very poorly. Possibly the most poorly I think I've ever been in my life.
That's horrible.
I think my insides became my outsides, which isn't nice. But there you go.
Onto the Carabao Cup hangover.
Yeah, just getting the rest of it out of my system, yeah.
That's not cup fever, is it? That's just
that was just
diarrhea.
Just fever, yeah. It was just horrific. Yeah. Anyway, I'm all right now. I'm back firing fit. Well, if anybody was worried about a cup hangover, they can sleep a little easier, can't they? 6 points, three of them perhaps a little tougher to earn than the other three. Either way, Eddie Howe's Newcastle are now extremely well positioned to chase down a Champions League spot for next season. Let's cast our minds back, chaps. 2-1 against Brentford. A good result, but it was fairly tricky, Jacob, wasn't it, for a little while?
Yep, but I mean, they got over the line, didn't they? I mean, what they really need is just getting those ugly wins. It'd been so easy to lose that game.
Yeah.
Like, mentally, you know they've had a break since the cup final, but those 2 weeks have been pretty filled with fun. And actually, I mean, the results both sides of that cup final, at West Ham and at home to Brentford, I think you'll look back at them in the reckoning, and those are six really hard-earned points, which, going into, I think probably Newcastle fans weren't super confident in. Prove wrong is probably the wrong phrase, but fully justified why they're in the position they are.
I think everybody, me included, George, was thinking it would be so Newcastle United to lose this game.
Yeah, absolutely. I do think it was kind of an interesting test. I mean, I think I've said before, I mean, like, part of me wouldn't have cared if Newcastle had lost every single game for the rest of the season 3-0. And, you know, because it's become the season where Newcastle have finally, you know, won a trophy. Brilliant. Got back into Europe. hit that target, which was set for them at the start of the season. But of course, that's not what you want. What you want is for the cup to inspire them, to give them momentum, almost give the team a free hit to go on and show what they're made of. And so it was a good test because, well, I mean, Brentford possibly more so than Leicester, because Leicester truly are hopeless.
Oh, yes.
But Brentford being the team that sort of forced one of Newcastle's big, big resets this season, the 4-2 down there. Yes, Newcastle then went on to beat them in the League Cup. But that was like a big moment down there. And it did cause a lot of soul searching. It's kind of interesting to sort of remember that. It's also interesting to remember that Leicester were the team that really sort of offered no resistance at St James's straight after that and really made life very easy for Newcastle. But, you know, they have had a problem dispatching these teams, the sort of mid-ranked yes. teams in the Premier League. Newcastle haven't, you know, they've roused themselves by and large for a lot of the big games and then haven't been able to turn it on at home when they're sort of expected to, but where it's almost a little bit beneath them. And so having had that huge emotional high of the cup final and winning it and having the celebration and then having that long wait, I do think that was a big moment and very pleasing that they've then followed up on it again.
And that Murphy-Isak partnership strikes again. Jacob pinpoint cross from the in-form wingman. Moments after Alexander Isak had spurned a great chance.
This is probably a throwback to something George enjoys, but right-footed wingers on the right wing, whipping it in.
Into me veins. Love it.
Talking dirty.
Stop it.
And what I really like with Isak is that we so often see him incredibly graceful. And this was like a good old-fashioned shovel. It was sort out your feet, get it in, any means. Ugly side to the game. And this is actually something I've talked about it before, but it's something I think he's really developed, those off-balance finishes, which just get the job done.
Yeah, and of course it took Alexander Isak to 20 Premier League goals for the season for the second consecutive season. He's the first Newcastle United player to do that in the Premier League era, and it's just a big moment. Eddie Howe said afterwards that it wasn't necessarily his best game. He was feeling his groin a bit.
Yeah.
But, you know, he's become that striker who will take a chance if he's given a chance. He's got everything in his locker. I wrote afterwards, I was asked to write up something about, you know, that whole sense of the world being after Isak and, yeah. you know, when he scores for Newcastle, it's about, you know, he's the striker who could do something for Arsenal. But, like, you know, we've got him. You can keep your hands off. He's a Newcastle player and he has shown his worth in so many different ways this season. But, like, you can't argue with those numbers. I mean, it's brilliant. And he could have had more too.
He could have. He did miss that one-on-one chance that we mentioned before, and Harvey Barnes was absolutely livid with him, wasn't he, for not squaring it.
But on that, Taylor, I think he's remarkable in the sense of a striker who doesn't really seem to be affected by misses. I can't remember the last time it felt like he let a run of three or four missed chances get in his head. He seems to have that fighter pilot mentality of just moving on, and it fits into that languidness with which he plays, but I think it's a really underappreciated and key part of his game.
It's a great point that, Jacob, you know, you talk about some of the other great strikers in Newcastle's history. Shearer was the prime example of that. It's like, if he missed, fine, you know, but he would be back there again in the same place. We've seen so many players wearing Newcastle shirts in the past. You miss a chance and it's like you can almost feel the trepidation and the fear when they get the ball from them, but also from the crowd. And Isak just doesn't have that at all. I mean, it's not, he's too good for it to be nonchalant, but he has that, yeah, absolute sort of,
if anything, it seems
grace
to steal him a bit more for it, doesn't it? It seems to make him concentrate and focus even more. It gives me a great chance to bring back an old email we had as well, which said, I would give Fabian Scherer a better chance to score from the halfway line than a Newcastle player get a one-on-one with the goalkeeper. And that's from Rob from Connecticut. We'll just leave that there and maybe we'll come back to that in a little while. Several chances did go begging, though, against Brentford, and they looked expensive, didn't they, when Nick Pope rashly kind of came out of his off his line and brought Wissa down, and Bermo put the penalty away and levelled things up, Jacob. A little bit of a rush of blood from Pope.
Yeah, it's weird. It looked funny as a challenge, didn't it? It's not quite a sort of penalty I feel like I've seen before, and I think that's very much because it's a challenge which didn't really need to be made. And it's one which felt odd because it's one of those where the chance of scoring the penalty far outweighs the chance of Brentford scoring from that position where they were at the time. But I don't think there's any way to justify that it wasn't a penalty. He was brought down by Pope. And it's a bit frustrating after Newcastle had done quite a good job of keeping Mbeumo quiet. Another really good game from Livramento that he got in with his penalty. But they regrouped.
They certainly did. And Sandro Tonali to the rescue, George. 70% shot, 30% cross, and Mark Flecken 100% befuddled.
There was quite a funny moment in the press room afterwards because everyone kind of like walked in, all the journalists walked in. It's like, oh, what a moment, what a brilliant, you know, what an incredible goal. You know, it's like, that's a goal for the ages. It's like extraordinary. And then it emerges that Tonali has said on television, it was 70% cross, and it was like, oh no. And you could see kind of journalists sort of scurry off to the corner of the room to call their bosses, call their desk and say, yeah, you know, and I was like, so it's a wonder goal. I might just have to tinker with that for the next edition of the paper because it was a cross. But well, I mean, you know, whether it was a cross or
it
a shot.
It kind of speaks to the type of player he is and the type of guy he is, though, doesn't it? That he's humble enough that he just puts his hands up and goes, yeah. I was crossing the ball, you know. I think there's a few players I know who wouldn't have been able to do that, who would have been, I totally meant that.
But the fact that he's now so comfortable in his skin at Newcastle, he feels like he is being valued for his role in the side. It's so visible what he is bringing that he doesn't need to claim it. He was like, yeah, it was a bit of a fluke, but you lads see what I do, don't you? I don't need to tell you. Yep, cool.
That's
cheers.
It. Yeah, you've all got it.
But what, I mean, and I know he wasn't talking his first language, but when he said afterwards it was 70% cross, 30% shot, he also said it was difficult for the goalkeeper, which it clearly was, and difficult also for me. Why was it difficult for him? He's just scored a goal.
Probably he means it was a difficult area of the pitch to be trying to shoot, I would think. So that it would be a hard...
Maybe, yeah.
I wonder what the XG was on that chance. It must have been 12.
He struck it. I mean, he strikes the ball.
Minus 0.2? I don't know. I don't even know how XG works.
He strikes the ball incredibly. He certainly doesn't. Yeah. And yeah, it is that thing that...
Would you rather play a game of Red Arse with Fabian Scher or Sandro Tonali?
Depends what the game is with Fabian Scher.
So Red Arse is if you lose a game like Wembley singles or keepy uppies or whatever, you stand on the goal line. And someone else puts the ball on the penalty spot and you bend over facing the net so that your bum is facing the penalty spot and all your mates take in turn to run up and sprint and boot the ball at your ass.
Is this what they do in public schools, Jacob?
This is what we do in all schools. And then if you miss, you join the line so you can end up with a conga line.
Yeah.
And you don't want someone who strikes it well. But Scher and Tonali would both be frightening figures to face.
That's a good question, though, and I'm going to give it some consideration. And I think I'm going to say I would be more fearful about Fabian Scher.
I would agree with that.
But it would also be kind of quite a beautiful punishment from him, wouldn't it? I mean, it would be.
This is taking a turn. I'm going to move this on before the soft music starts.
Okay.
We didn't trail in this game, but it kind of felt like it at 1-1. Jacob, you subsequently wrote about game state and how good Newcastle are from both winning and losing positions.
Yeah, well, I'm sorry, I'm going to re-go over mine and George's breakfast conversation where we talked about what game state was. But basically this is making the point that Newcastle are really good at managing games, and this is something which has developed in the last year or so, it feels, statistically. So
why did you have to call it something else then? It's like you have to reinvent the game of football. It was like it was perfectly all right. It was perfectly all right with the, like, you know, what's the phrase about people being behind the ball? What's the phrase that people say?
Low block.
Low block. It's people behind the ball. Why can't you just say 10 men behind the ball?
Verticality. That's the one that I don't get that.
Oh, verticality is a great one, though.
Verticality is not game state. Right, so they're good at managing the game. They're good at managing the game. No, I do think it's kind of interesting.
Did you want me to explain the piece?
Yeah, I do. I want you to explain what game state means, yeah.
So, only Liverpool do better than Newcastle in earning points from losing positions, but Newcastle actually do better on a point-per-game basis. But if they go behind, Newcastle come behind quite often. They've got 18 points this year, which is the most they've had in 24 years, and a massive improvement already on last year. But then when they're winning the game, they basically never give up the lead. They've dropped the fewest points from winning position all season. It's just been... I think they've led 18 times and won 15 of them. Basically, they get ahead, they're probably going to get the points. And if we think about this race for fifth place, which is so massively tight, is going to be turning those draws into wins, which really seal that. And Newcastle have been unbelievably good.
Fair play. Here's what Eddie Howe had to say about it.
We've got an experienced group, so I think we have the ability to manage situations pretty well. That's a great thing to have. The ability, especially for me, the ability to come back is something that we do a bit of work on in training, and we have different philosophies to try and come back in games, because that ability means you're never out of a game and you've got the consistent ability to win. So I think that's the one that I treasure the most.
What is that work in training?
I think that's for me to know.
Sorry, Jacob.
Shut down there.
Oh, well and truly.
I've never heard Lee Marshall, the press officer, give sympathies before, after a question.
It was very good. I mean, it is one of the kind of funny things about him. I mean, it's not a horrible thing. It's like quite a funny little trait, but he just won't give details about sort of anything that they do on the training pitch. You know, that he guards all of that stuff so jealously. But it's a great stat, and as he, and it was something, very interesting that Jacob sort of pulled that out. And absolutely, you want to have a trait like that. I mean, I suppose part of that is just about confidence, isn't it? It's about, you know, having confidence in each other, having confidence in your game plan, what you've been told, having confidence in your teammates that even if things go badly in games, you've got the quality to turn it round. And, you know, yeah, I mean, talking about some of the teams that I've been watching over the past 3 days, it's absolutely the opposite that, you know, no matter what position they are in the game, you don't feel confident they're going to get anything out of it. And to be in the opposite position is very, very valuable.
And I think it's not just that they're an experienced team, but they're an experienced team who have played together for a relatively long time. Like, the spine of this team is unchanged in quite a few seasons. And yes, that is often seen as a bad thing, but really it means that the process of problem solving, which really is what this ultimately is when it boils down to it, is that much easier to do. You have that expectation, you can have those conversations quickly, and you can adapt.
Right, chaps, let's have a quick break. We'll be back in a moment or so to talk about that 3-0 win against Leicester last night.
That's Pelagani Proparaggi. Away the lads.
So 3 points in the bag against Brentford. We headed up to Leicester with a spring in our step. Unlike the hosts, has there ever been a more dejected atmosphere in football than Walker Stadium on Monday night? George mentioned his experience of such environments, but our away end seemed to have a good time.
Yeah, it was... Yeah, I mean, of the three teams that I saw over the weekend, it was by far the most depressing.
It's kind of heartbreaking, isn't it, really? I don't have a problem with Leicester. I've got a bit of a soft spot for them, and I kind of felt for them last night.
Well, I mean, you know, empathy withers in football. You know, people never sort of understand or try to understand what another club goes through, which is why people couldn't understand it when Newcastle were in the Premier League under Mike Ashley, but not doing anything. And it was this sort of existing to exist and nothing else. But, you know, you would have fans of plenty of other clubs saying, you know, what have they got to complain about? Funnily enough, it was the Spurs fans in that game who were against Southampton who were rebelling against their own ownership and Daniel Levy, because, you know, for them, the Premier League has become this kind of gilded prison where they're in it. You know, they're almost guaranteed to be in it. But again, they've won one trophy this century and, you know, things just aren't going the way they want. I mean, it is all about that sort of different level of expectation and so on and so forth. But yeah. And it's that funny thing. I mean, like, you know, what are we, 10 years on from Leicester winning the title when they were 5,000-1 shots? They were only 50-1 shots to stay up before the game last night, but he would not have put a penny on that. I mean, they were dreadful. I mean, they were sort of beyond dreadful, really. And yeah, seeing a team that has no sort of obvious cohesion and plan, again, this is something that is not necessarily an unusual thing for Newcastle fans to see, but just no confidence. And again, you know, you go back to that game that at St James's when Leicester came up here and, you know, Newcastle won 4-0, and it was like they proved to be the perfect opponents at exactly the right time. And yeah, there's just something sort of rotten there in that club at the minute. And it's Newcastle fans loved it. They were singing "Say Hello to Sunderland," la 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 la, and all of that kind of stuff. And you know, from a Newcastle perspective, it was absolutely a second gear performance, and that's all it had to be.
Joe Linton actually headed Jamie Vardy a decent chance before we scored in the second minute. It was a bit of a facile goal, really. But nice work down the left-hand side from Barnes and Livramento before Jacob Murphy taps in from close range, Jacob.
Eddie Howe was absolutely thrilled with that goal.
Yeah.
He really spoke and made a point in his post-match press conference to say that I'm paraphrasing slightly here, but he was sort of talking about it as the embodiment of the way he wanted Newcastle to play. It was quick transitioned. Yeah. It really showed off their verticality, the overlap.
Nice, nice, nicely done.
No,
beautiful.
I thought what one thing which it really showed was something we wrote about in the briefing was just how good Tino Livramento's been since swapping sides, because Barnes drifts in, as he's done quite often, but then Livramento timing his run absolutely perfectly, because it means that by the time he puts the ball in...
The same overlap from the cup final, wasn't it? The same one.
And it's a slightly different cross. And it shows with his weaker foot. In the cup final, he's digging it deep and looping it. This one driven in. But he just executed every single bit of that sort of three-step process absolutely perfectly.
Yeah, and take another step back and think about how we felt before the cup final when Anthony Gordon... who's been absolutely one of Newcastle's most important players over the past 18 months, two seasons, you know, albeit up and down this time. When he gets sent off, it's like, okay, we may as well just hand the cup to Liverpool. That was certainly my sort of initial reaction. But that left side, Tino, and of course Harvey Barnes. Harvey Barnes, I've talked about on the podcast, being the one player that seemingly had not kind of been touched by that Eddie Howe alchemy, but he's made an impact. He can be a frustrating player in the sense that you want more from him, maybe sometimes in terms of absolute impact, but scored another goal at Leicester and he has absolutely played his part. And I don't want to say that Anthony Gordon hasn't been missed, but Newcastle have found a way of compensating. Totally agree about Livramento on that side. And of course, we have to talk about, you know, Lewis Hall too being missing, and it was certainly a proper strength of the team earlier on this season, and they've compensated for that, and we haven't really noticed those players being missing, which is pretty extraordinary.
It is. 10 minutes gone. Jacob Murphy finds himself on a hat trick. He tapped in his second when Fabian Scheer tested out Rob from Connecticut's theory. Rob subsequently messaged and said he almost did it. I have to talk about this. Because I went through, I think, possibly every single emotion that you can as a football fan from the moment that ball left Fabian Scheer's boot to Jacob Murphy putting it in the net. I was annoyed that he had shot in the first place when Murphy was through 1-1. Then as the ball sails, I think, this is going to go in, you know. Then it hits the bar and I'm devastated because I think the greatest goal I've ever seen in my life is not going to happen. And then Jacob Murphy taps in the rebound. The sheer size of the bollocks on Fabian Scheer, honestly...
Red ass, big bollocks. I mean, it's just a collection of genitals. There was surely nobody else in the Newcastle team would have tried. I mean, he's a centre half. I mean, it's like I wrote that last night. It's like you have to remember he's a centre half. He loves it though, doesn't he?
He loves it. Yeah,
he's got an eye. We know how brilliantly he can strike the ball. You know, he's got an eye for a shot. He always wants to do that. But the way he can ping the ball forward. It's a huge reason, you know, why Eddie Howe would want to keep him, why he signed this new one-year contract, not just because of the way he plays as a defender and the quality he's got there, but nobody else can do what he does on the ball. It's such a shame that it hit the crossbar and didn't go in. I mean, it was a brilliant moment. It was a terrible moment from the Leicester perspective.
Oh, they all stood and watched, didn't they? You know, it was poor.
They stood and watched. It was a dreadful pass from Cody to Vardy, lazy on both... on both ends, but he saw it, he robbed the ball, and then to shoot like that from the centre circle, but inside Newcastle territory, was just so audacious. Yeah, just brilliant.
I thought it was somehow more embarrassing for Leicester that it didn't go in first time, but because the goalkeeper was effectively lobbed, he was scrabbling back, the embarrassment had already happened, and then it gave Murphy that extra moment just to sort of take it and gleefully smash it in.
Yeah.
It made the whole process just take that little bit longer, like the head were in their hands when they peaked and then they're back in.
I very much enjoyed Jacob Murphy's interview afterwards, talking about his reaction to the whole thing, that when the ball landed in front of him, he wasn't quite sure what to do and essentially shit himself, took about 7 touches and then poked it past the keeper. But he did well to get it under control eventually and put it in.
He was passing his heart, wasn't he, in the kind of celebrations, yeah.
And of course, like, this could have been the second goal he scored like this in his career. I went back into the archives and found a video I'd previously included in a piece about Fabian Scher from a few years ago. We have to go back to 2011, when Fabian Scher was still a teenager, and he scored possibly one of the best goals from behind halfway I've ever seen.
Oh, wow.
For FC Ville, his hometown team, against FC Aru, for any Swiss football aficionados. And he puts it into an absolute postage stamp. Like, the goalkeeper's not even that out of position. It's on my Twitter. I'll go check that out, or maybe producer Ollie can put a link up on the Podium Sign account. But yeah, I mean, what a way that would have been to mark a new contract. I mean, absolutely. Would ever it have been underscored so emphatically ever before?
But a mate of mine used to put a bet on every single match of Jonjo Shelvey to score from the halfway line, and I wonder if he's changed that bet now to Fabian. He's now got his eye in, hasn't he? Maybe the next one will go in. He's also signed a new 1-year deal announced earlier this week as well. George, good news?
Well, it absolutely is, yeah. I mean, Chris has written about what kind of that means, or what that tells us in terms of sort of Newcastle's recruitment strategy for the summer. Not kind of addressing that directly, but, you know, just sort of saying, I mean, I do think Scher deserves it. There have been times this season he's looked tired. No player has played more under Eddie Howe, by the way, since Howe was appointed. He has been so reliable. Yeah, he's in his 30s now, but I think it's reward for him. It's recognition of his contribution. I think the idea with what they will do in the summer is that he might end up playing a bit less next season, albeit, you know, people said the same thing about Dan Burn this time. I mean, it's, you know, saying it is one thing, but let's see what happens in practice. He's a brilliant player to have around. He, you know, I kind of hope that we have now sort of stopped this thing where we try to jettison players for quote unquote not being good enough. He's absolutely showed he's good enough. And yeah, I'm delighted he'll be around. In some of those comments that were made when he signed his contract, Paul Mitchell, the sporting director, talked about the collaborative way that Newcastle will be working together. And I do think, you know, it's like Newcastle will have a bit more wriggle room this summer in terms of PSR, but they're not going to be able to go out and you know, just bring in a whole new team. They're going to need the players that or a lot of the players that they've been using, and they need a bigger squad and a better squad. Scher very much remains part of that.
Let's just quickly pull it back to Jacob Murphy. Jacob, it's sixth in the Premier League at the minute for assists with 9-16 goal contributions from 27 appearances. And this is from Sky Sports as well. Since December the 7th, only Isak and Salah have more goal contributions. The lad's having a stormer, isn't he? He's having a great season.
Top 3 player in the league is all I'm hearing from that statistic.
Yes.
There's your front three. I mean, Salah might have to play on his weaker side to allow Murphy to get into the squad.
To accommodate Murphy, yeah, exactly.
Exactly. I mean, Isak up front, and boosh, there's your team.
But all joking aside, though, I mean, he's been wonderful. Everyone spoke about how Newcastle needed a right wing, and they needed to go and spend money on a right wing. And Jacob Murphy's he's put the numbers up, hasn't he?
The way he's responded has been brilliant in that. Yeah, I mean, it's you know, he can be an infuriating player, because there are times when you want more from him, when he won't make the right decision in terms of distribution or whatever. But those stats absolutely speak for themselves. Isak isn't the Isak that we've seen without Murphy's contribution. They kind of just know where each other is going to be. It's brilliant, and it's a great reward. His is a great story. Newcastle's squad is full of great stories. And, you know, his of coming at a very difficult time for the club, kind of being jettisoned, really having to do it the hard way. And, yeah, two more goals last night. Just brilliant.
And we know, I think Chris has written this week, that Newcastle are going to be active in the market for a right winger. And all Murphy's doing is just basically raising the bar that that winger is going to have to do to start if they come in. I mean, he's fought off challenges before of sort of newer, more expensive, sexier names to still be playing for Newcastle. And we know that Eddie Howe often takes his time to bring in players and he wants them to adjust to the system. And having Murphy there really is that luxury for Newcastle, which, you know, it's not just going to be a new, it's not going to be a new name sort of in the middle of August. Like, Jacob Murphy has a lot to say about that.
100%. Overall, then, an excellent pair of results, that, George. The manager called it a psychological tick in the box after some concerns about attitude and effort earlier in the season. But you can honestly say those concerns have been allayed.
Yeah, I mean, I think so. I mean, that was something that I asked him about. You know, Leicester wasn't a great example because they were so bad. But yeah, when you go back to the Brentford game and those sort of results, Brentford away, West Ham at home, you know, others too, Newcastle just haven't been able to sort of finish those teams off. They haven't, you know, they've had a real problem against them. And he has questioned their attitude. And, you know, as he said, that isn't something that you can rely upon forever. You know, he doesn't want to say that that's been, as you've just said there, banished for good. But certainly the response after the final, from before the final with the West Ham game too, has been really, really good and positive. It leaves Newcastle in a great position in the table, very healthy, full of form, should be confident. And then, you know, eventually Gordon will come back into the reckoning. You would hope that he'll be really hungry to hit the ground running. Might not be for Man United, but yeah, overall, just, it was, as I said, it was a second gear performance against Leicester, and still Newcastle have absolutely managed to brush them aside.
So then, attention turns to the run-in, a very tough run of games coming up, Man United and Palace at home, before a trip to Aston Villa. We can preview the Palace-Villa games on next week's episode, but first up, it's Manchester United, our end-of-level boss. But since the 2023 Carabao Cup final, we've beaten them in four of the five meetings, George. Newcastle shouldn't be scared of this fixture anymore.
No, absolutely not. Yeah, I mean, perhaps their form has been a bit better, but where are they in the table? It's 13th, isn't it? And their away form is pretty average. They're having an absolutely dreadful season from their own position. And yeah, as you say, that's a game that Newcastle should be approaching with relish. Absolutely, be attacking. They're, you know, it's still astonishing to sort of see where they are on the table. And end of level boss, certainly in terms of kind of cup finals or good, you know, good things happening. But yeah, should be full of confidence.
Stylistically, it's a really good matchup for Newcastle in the sense of Manchester United's midfield really not great at duelling and doing sort of the ugly work, which Newcastle's are so good at when they're on form. And an attacking line, you just don't seem to shift defenders around at all. Like, watching the Manchester derby at the weekend, like, struth, that was a bleak attacking performance to watch. So I mean, I'm sure if Chris Waffle was on this, he'd be very pessimistic about what the outlook was. But good vibes only here.
The form is better than the last time we played them, albeit they have just played in what the Athletics journalist did call the worst Manchester derby in history. George, did you see any of that game? It was turgid.
No, because I was watching the giddy heights of Spurs versus Southampton.
Better quality.
I mean, another kind of big team flailing. And another, I mean, in Spurs, I know we're not talking about Spurs, but, you know, another team who insist on sort of playing in a certain way, no matter what the sort of circumstances are, which is, and I do find it kind of peculiar that, I mean, also from those teams who are going to go down, that certainly, you know, certainly kind of Southampton starting this season, insisting on playing a certain way and never compromising. And yeah, you know, Eddie Howe has a way that he wants to play. He has a certain sort of style, but I do think that there's more pragmatism there. And I mean, Man United are hopeless. This is a hopeless Manchester United team. I'm not being unkind saying it in that way. I just their position at the table speaks for itself. That is hopeless from a Manchester United club, and Newcastle, the position they're in, they should be able to beat them. I can't believe I'm saying it like that, but
I know it feels weird, doesn't it, to think of it that way. They've also got two legs of a Europa League tie against Lyon as well, either side of the Newcastle game, and that competition, Jacob, is essentially their only route back into Europe this season.
Yep, stars are aligning for Newcastle, I guess.
I wonder how they're feeling over there at the other podcast. I wonder how they're doing.
Yeah, but we're just in their heads. They're talking about rent, us the whole time. Rent-free. The whole time.
I think that's the term, isn't it? Newcastle have been able to manage their players better, especially Leicester, George, with the result safe. But as Howe said, we don't have a youthful group, do we? There's a lot of miles in those legs, and there's not an awful lot of depth to come off the bench.
No, and he's kept the same team since Wembley, but I don't really mind about that. I mean, it is coming in now into a busy period. You would expect there to be changes moving forward simply because there are those fixtures crowded together. Unlike Man United, not in Europe, so that kind of eases the strain a little bit. But there are players who are kind of coming on and making an impact. We saw kind of Longstaff get some good minutes in his legs. Miley the same. Wilson too. Asula came on, run about. You know, I think that will be valuable. And I don't have anything else to say about that.
See you next week.
Oh, there was no exit to that sentence, was there? There just wasn't. There was no off ramp to it.
No, definitely not. No, it's going to go on forever unless I just ended it.
Fair enough. At least you got out when you could.
Thank you.
Fitness concerns are usually Chris's job, but Joe Willock is still out for the foreseeable with concussion. Is there any other news at all, George, on fitness?
I can't think of anything. Was there anything?
Anthony Gordon hasn't trained with the team yet. He hadn't trained with the team before the visit to Leicester. And how should they take a look at him over the coming days to see if he gets back into it? But you'd imagine that given the form of Murphy on the right and Barnes on the left, there's not that need to rush him back, which might have been felt a month or so ago.
And we've also got to say congratulations to Kieran Trippier on 600 career appearances. He's been very, very good recently. He'll be important in that run-in as well, George. His cool head, his experience has been shining through.
Yeah, it's been great to see him kind of come back into the team, and yeah, it's been such a strange season for him. Obviously, sort of lots of rumours about potentially leaving, both in the summer and then again in January, just as there were the previous January. And you know, I've kind of felt, funnily enough, talking about how great Livramento has been on the left, I've kind of felt all season that if and when Trippier got himself back fit and firing, he would come back into the team, because I just think that it's been tricky for Tino for long stretches. And then, for whatever reason, usually fitness, but a couple of sort of dodgy performances as well, Trippier's not been able to cement his place back, and it sort of added to that sense of kind of uncertainty. But yeah, since, I mean, he was brilliant at Wembley. For some of that game on one leg, it felt. But like that leadership, the ability to direct a game, to inspire his teammates, just that management, talking about game management, just brilliant the way that he's able to sort of shape things. We're not seeing him sort of bomb on in the same way that when it was him and sort of Miggy, yeah, playing together on that side, you know, they were that pace, incredible sort of pace. And it's not like that anymore. But he just offers so many valuable qualities, and yeah, definitely pay big tribute to him because he's been great. And whether, you know, we're seeing the end of his time at Newcastle now or not, I don't know. But if so, I'm glad it's ending on a high note.
Yes, congratulations, Kieran. A huge 9-day spell coming up then in our pursuit of Champions League football. We've just got enough time to check in with Opta's supercomputer, which is one of the most enjoyable things to say with a Geordie accent. The supercomputer. They've got a season simulation. According to the Boffins, Newcastle United have a 70% chance of a top five finish, almost certainly bringing Champions League back to Tyneside after, let's just check this, one year wait.
70% is not almost certainly. Like,
no,
that's an opposite. Like,
no,
that I, will go
on,
a waft,
I'm just going to stop you there. I think what they're saying is the top five finish isn't almost certain.
Yeah, but there's only a 10% chance of that.
Yes. 70% of the time it works every time.
I love that quote. That's one of my favourite quotes. It comes from, is it the Naked Gun or Police Squad? There's only if anybody ever mentions a percentage, you always have to go back to them and say, yeah, but there's only a 10% chance of that. and they won't know what you're talking about, but it gets them every time.
Definitely. International break as well, so no game for the lasses, but congratulations to our call-ups, especially Rachel Furness. Despite being a country's all-time leading scorer, it's the first time Rachel's been in the Northern Ireland squad since October 23. Great news and a rich reward for her efforts since joining Newcastle. That's it, chaps. That's it. Pod on the tine at theathletic.com if you want to get in touch. We've still got messages coming in with lovely stories about the cup final. We will revisit those at the end of the season, but don't be shy if you've got a good one, so get in touch. Thank you very much, chaps. Thanks, Jacob.
Thank you. I enjoyed that. Nice energy today.
Yeah. Lovely stuff. And thank you very much, George Corgan.
Yeah, you're welcome. Was that good? I feel like I've sort of the relegation.
You've had a hard weekend, mate, haven't you? You've had a long
weekend. I feel like it's infected me. I feel like it's in my blood now. I feel like that was a sort of relegation style performance that I've given there. Yeah. I think it was pretty hapless.
It was very much Leicester City.
Yeah.
Would you like an official change to your job role? Senior sadness writer, The Athletic, or do you want it to be official?
Pope of Mope.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's like there I was. There was something sort of tragically beautiful about it. I did feel like a angel of sort of death swooping into these places, opening my
wings. This is your
wings.
New gig, isn't it? It's
not my new gig. I've spent 30 years doing this, Taylor. The new gig is doing the positive stuff.
Fair enough.
But there I was like a vulture ready to swoop down and sort of pick apart the corpses of these clubs. Yeah, wow. I did feel in my element in some ways. They see me coming and they know it's trouble.
Equal parts beautiful and terrifying, that, George. Thanks for that.
That's it, yeah.
Thank you for your time anyway. It's been fun.
You're welcome.
Excellent. Right, we'll be back on Monday. Thanks a lot for listening. From everybody at Pod on the Tine, take care. Goodbye.
When it was him and
Almiron.
God, how quickly they forget. How quickly they forget. That fella. God. Sorry, Miggy.
The Athletic FC Podcast Network.